And welcome to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and joining me now is Scott Braden, who is the executive director and the conservation leader for the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. Scott, welcome to This Green Earth.
Thanks, Claire. It's good to be with you.
First, let's start out and learn a little bit about your organization, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, the why and how this was formed.
So Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, or SUA, was organized in 1983 by citizens of Utah who were concerned that conservation and protection of wilderness lands, particularly in Southern Utah and our West Desert, were getting the short end of the stick, and that the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, was not doing a great job of both identifying and protecting wilderness quality lands in Utah. And it's a substantial acreage. There's 22 million acres of federal public lands managed by the BLM in Utah. So it's a nationally significant set of values that have drawn people from all over the nation to care deeply about Red Rock Country.
When you got involved, what was it that drew you to this organization in particular? What was the work that really made you want to be a part of it?
I grew up back east, and I didn't have a lot of exposure growing up to public lands. And after college, I became an outdoor educator working for the Colorado Outward Bound School, and that's what got me to Utah. And so my crash course on public lands was being an instructor and an educator on Utah's rivers and canyons, and really seeing the power of wild places to have a positive impact on people's lives, our students, but also myself as staff. And at the same time, really became aware of some of the threats that these wild places were facing, from increased energy development to spreading motorized recreation and roads into previously wild places. And that really led me to SUA and their mission. And eventually I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go to work there. I worked there for a while and moved to Colorado for a while, and I've been very fortunate to be able to come back to lead the organization in 2025.
So personally, when you close your eyes and you think about bear's ears in your mind's eye, what resonates with you most about this area?
I think really that it is a indigenous landscape as well as a spectacular wilderness landscape, and holding both of those things in my mind is what I think about. And that it's not just a historical, ancestral indigenous landscape. It is actively a critical part of the lifeway of, you know, the five tribes that are represented on the Bears Ears Commission. So it's a place of ongoing cultural significance to those tribes and the tribes of the Southwest, as well as just an enormous resource of wilderness lands. I think of White Canyon and Dark Canyon and, you know, some of those Red Rock landscapes that are compelling, that were compelling to me when I was an educator with Outward Bound, and that I think remain compelling for, you know, thousands of people who visit.
Right. There were a few comments made that made it sound like the area was inaccessible to people, but many people have enjoyed and walked and taken in this area. So how do people now or in the past, how have they absorbed this part of our natural world?
When you think about the justifications that were used by President Trump and members of the Utah congressional delegation and Governor Cox to reduce the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments so dramatically, it really relies on falsehoods. It relies on a narrative that you can barely walk there, you can't hunt, you can't fish, you can't gather firewood, you can't graze, you can't take your motorized vehicle anywhere anymore, that the lands are locked up, inaccessible. And that's just flatly untrue. People have accessed these lands for millennia, as we've discussed, but also in the most recent management plans, there was not widespread closure of off-road vehicle routes. Access remains largely the same in both the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase as before. So, you know, in order to justify such a radical reduction of these monuments, over 90% of their acreage, you know, they had to really fashion a narrative that falls apart under close examination, that, you know, you can't do anything in these lands. And I think that people who spend time close to these lands and interact with these lands and recreate on these lands will know that that rings false.
So you've brought that up, the reduction. We know that there's a proposed reduction of our national monuments. Grand Staircase Escalante will be reduced from 1.87 million acres to just over about 181,000, while Bears Ears will be cut from 1.36 million to nearly 121,000 acres. Now, it really takes you back if you think about the vastness of this area and how small it will become. What are some of the consequences that are potentially detrimental to that area, but even rippling out? What are some of the things that might happen due to this reduction of land?
Well, to take the first part of that, the reductions to the monuments and the acreages that you described are shocking. Over 90% of the acreage eliminated from national monument protection. We believe it's illegal. You know, the Antiquities Act, which is the law that gives presidents the power to protect places as national monuments, does not also give presidents the ability to reduce or eliminate national monuments. So first of all, I think it's important to your listeners to note that it wasn't a lawful action that happened. And the threat is that to the ground, when you lift the protections that the national monument offers to a wide variety of resources, whether that's recreation or paleontological resources, you know, incredible dinosaur fossil finds over in Grand Staircase Escalante, the indigenous treasure trove, really, of indigenous sacred sites across both landscapes. All of these are now vulnerable to certain kinds of impacts, such as increased mining, energy development, increased motorized recreation, new routes, punching into previously quiet areas. You know, this makes those cultural and indigenous sites more vulnerable to looting and damage, and so much more. So I think what we're likely to see is just more development and more of an emphasis on development in the places that were reduced. And indeed, in the new national monuments announced by President Trump, too, that even within the areas, these much smaller monuments, it really tilts the scales towards development rather than preservation of what makes these places special. The second part of your question, what does this mean for public lands more broadly? The way I see it is that this is part of Senator Mike Lee and the rest of the Utah congressional delegation's agenda to dismantle our system of public lands. And, you know, we saw last year Senator Lee and Representative Celeste Molloy leading the charge to include millions of acres of public land sell-off as part of the budget reconciliation bill. You see, this year, the same pair, Senator Lee and Representative Molloy, pushing a bill in Congress that would have stripped the Grand Staircase of its management plan, then that failed. They were trying to use the Congressional Review Act, and, you know, they ran out of time because of the popular support for these monuments. They weren't able to get that to move forward. And so I think this is part of a overarching program, an agenda, if you will, that's sort of driven more by ideology than actual complaints about what you can or can't do on the ground, that frankly sees a future for Utah where the majority of lands are in private hands and private control and not public lands like we have now.
Just for a moment, I'd like to turn our lens on the ecosystems in these places and what the outcomes might be for the flora and fauna in those areas.
That's right. I mean, it sort of doesn't consider the well-being of plants and animals, of Wildlife, even the geology and the paleontology. Like the reason these lands are public in the first place is in many cases, these lands are quite arid and they don't, you know, lend themselves to a lot of the traditional uses of land, like agriculture and things that you might associate further east. And so that aridity, the importance of riparian areas to ecosystems makes protecting large parts of our public lands and the Intermountain West even more important. And I think that the agenda that's being pushed by Senator Lee and others really undermines the protection of wildlife habitat and a lot of those other special values that we're talking about, which needs space to survive.
I'm curious because we are going to be speaking with other conservation groups like the Wilderness Society later on the show. We've also spoken with the Grand Staircase Escalante Partners. And there are many groups, including the Native American Rights Fund and the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, that have been formed to protect these public lands. And they are protecting those that also have stewarded the lands for hundreds of years. And with these organizations, and there is a lot of outcry by the public against these reductions, and you have the Antiquities Act. What do you see as a path forward from here? What can be done at this point?
We work in coalition with all of the groups that you just mentioned, and you know, the ultimate goal is to see these monuments restored and to see the landscape permanently protected. You hear a lot of talk about the ping pong of protections for these national monuments, but you know, I would argue that national monuments have been a very durable way to protect public lands. Four of the five Mighty Five national parks in Utah started their lives as national monuments, and no one was slashing monument boundaries before Trump came along in 2017 and first shrank Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante. So we, as I mentioned, see that as an unlawful action. And, you know, with our partners and friends and with the tribes are definitely going to challenge these actions in federal court. But those solutions take time, right? So in the meantime, I think it's important for people to speak up and make their voices heard and to hold Utah's elected officials accountable. Yeah.
If we're putting numbers down, it is showing that more than 70% of Utah voters actually want to keep the original monument boundaries. So when you have this public sentiment, do you think that this rattles anything?
Absolutely. People power makes the difference. I think that we've seen this show before in Utah very, very recently with the proposed data center in Box Elder County, where there were consequences for elected officials who acted in bad faith. And I think that you're seeing that same behavior pattern play out in this national monument issue, where nobody really did any outreach to tribes ahead of this. There's no consultation with tribes or the local impacted communities before this action was taken. So you can tell by the popularity of these places and the numbers, the polling numbers that you cited, that these monuments are broadly popular, which explains the sort of quiet, sneaky way in which our elected representatives ignored the will of the people and instead did this, you know, kind of, you know, metaphorically in the dark of night.
So when you look at the vulnerability of this area, you talked about some of the archaeological sites and also some of the sacred protected areas that have artifacts on the lands. Is there hope, even if this does happen, to protect these artifacts or these sites?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's important to not give up hope that we will ultimately prevail in protecting these landscapes. In the meantime, SUA and our partners are committed to defending the land. And so we'll be scrutinizing and challenging any proposed projects. I think that, you know, it's been well documented that proximity to roads is like one of the most vulnerable things for archaeological sites. And so we'll be challenging anything that is going to harm the special values of either of these monuments while we're fighting that longer fight of permanently protecting the landscapes and restoring the national monuments. People power still counts for something. And when we lift our collective voices, we can still affect the outcomes.
We've been speaking with Scott Braden, who is the executive director and conservation leader for the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. What was your website again, Scott?
Yep, folks can check us out at suwa.org and find out how you can get involved.
And on a positive note, you do have a lot of projects that you do at SUA. You have volunteer opportunities so people can get further involved with you. Is there a project in particular that you're excited about that SUA is doing now?
Yeah, folks can check out on our website opportunities to get involved that aren't just like taking action politically or commenting on a project. We offer a variety of ways to engage, including a stewardship program where you can get involved, do things that help protect public lands on the ground, whether that be helping put up signs or clean up campsites, or, you know, just there's a lot of needs on the ground, and our stewardship team does an excellent job at creating projects in partnership with the BLM that connect people to landscape. And I think that connecting people to landscape is an important way to give back for these public lands that give so much to us.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of this Green Earth today.
Thanks, Claire. It was good to be here.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth. If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learn something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.